There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to another episode of But Why, the podcast that's all about digging into big questions and tricky topics for our honest conversation. This week we're going to be looking at sleep. And actually, as I've been preparing for this, I've been thinking maybe there is no bigger subject than sleep. It's so fundamental, so I'm really looking forward to digging into that. Today I'm joined by not one but two guests. They are TV presenter Kat Kubey and baby sleep expert and Norland qualified nanny, Sarah Carpenter. Sarah has come off the back of a night shift, so I'm in awe of you, if you can even string a sentence together, because I am such a bad person when I don't sleep. Literally, the world crumbles around me, so hats off to you. The pair are best known for being hosts of a top 10 parenting podcast, The Sleep Mums, and authors of Sleep Better Baby, which disrupts the narrative around baby sleep whilst empowering parents with skills and confidence to get a good night's sleep. I'm reading that now. I've got three kids and my youngest is five, so I am out of those days, but wow, there is nothing like the pain of those.
It's brutal. It's totally brutal. And as you say, Sarah does it on the regular still. She's got three kids. We both got three kids too. And she's choosing to go back into that space.
There are times when I kind of go to bed at night and I just think, thank Christ I haven't got a newborn. Because there is a special kind of, to be honest, hell of being tired but not knowing when the next good night's sleep is coming from. It's not something else, isn't it?
I don't know, though. I mean, so I have 7 and a 5 and a 1-year-old. So I'm kind of still in the thick of those early years as well. But I often find that my 7 and 5-year-old are up as often, whether it's for a wee, for a nightmare, something like that. And so, and they need
more.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So sometimes it can be more disruptive to going back to sleep, like quite often after they've got me up. So like I was thinking about that when we're thinking about today, that, you know, we say a lot that sleep isn't linear, like it doesn't fall in a straight line. You're not going to crack baby sleep and then suddenly have a child that sleeps forever. In the same way that, you know, as an adult, you're not like, oh, I cracked sleeping through when I was 12 months old and then, you know, I've slept beautifully ever since. It just doesn't happen like that.
I think you're so right. I think one of the biggest, well, there's a couple of ideas that we have about like the baby days, you know, oh, get to 12 or 16 weeks and it'll be easier. It's just like, wow, why are we, and I just really remember in the beginning just crawling towards that. And again, with every subsequent child, I had the confidence to know that I would sleep again, they would sleep. And as you absolutely say, you are not going to get a child that sleeps through the night, because as an adult you do not sleep through the night always. It's not like hard and fast like that, is it?
I think there's so many kind of buzz phrases like that, like sleeping through the night, and, you know, to convincing people that it's going to be 6 weeks, 12 weeks, 16 weeks. And that just puts so much pressure on parents to get to these stages, and then it doesn't happen, and, you know, people then are just so devastated and feel like failures, when actually it was never going to happen that way and it's not as clean cut as that. So yeah, it is really difficult. But I think, you know, one of the things that we talk about a lot is the fact that nobody sleeps through the night. Babies don't sleep through the night, children don't sleep through the night, and adults do not sleep through the night. And I know.
And you definitely don't.
I definitely don't. You know, I'm like, I definitely am 4 hours, and it's better if it's broken. If I get more than that and more consistent than that, I'm miserable. I just feel ill. So, you know, your body clock does adapt.
What? I know. I'm a good 8 hours a night person, to, I have to say, but Sarah bucks the trend.
Yeah.
You and Margaret Thatcher, wasn't she really?
Oh, God, that's a terrible.
That's what I was always telling, you know, Margaret Thatcher existed on, 4 hours sleep. I'm a kind of, around about seven is good for me. And I'm fine. And I think when I was younger, it was probably a bit more. But 4 hours, really?
Yeah. I honestly feel hungover if I get more than that. So that's me.
That's often true with parents as well, or people who maybe work night shift, or, you know, or do have like difficulty sleeping, that, you know, once they start to get more, they can actually quite often feel
worse for it.
So there has, you know, we were talking about this the other day. There's almost sort of this, I think, 3-night minimum that you need to have had good night's sleep, and then you start to feel a bit better. Yeah. So you'd say that you need to get back into normal sleeping. I think that's probably true for night shift workers as well, and parents actually.
Yeah, and it's, what's strange for me is that you can have like a couple of dodgy nights sleep and you feel fine, and then for some reason you have a one-off bad one and it absolutely knocks you. And my own feeling on that is it's just a symptom of what else is going on in your life. And sometimes you've got capacity to go on no sleep, and sometimes you desperately need that sleep.
Yeah. And it's also about needs. Like, that's sort of, we relate it massively, and when we're talking about baby or child sleep, about fulfilling your needs within a 24-hour period, you know, rather than like this sort of 12 hours day, 12 hours night, can be a bit misleading from that point of view. You know, if you're having like really long naps, you might not need your 7 hours.
That's so true, isn't it? As you went, you've both got three kids, so I'm interested to know what your kind of journey with sleep as a parent was with those. Did your views change from one to the other? What did you learn along the way? It's a massive question, but
I think mine, so I was a sleep consultant long before I had children. So my first, I felt like I put a lot of pressure on myself to be this, or to have this perfect sleeper, because it's what I do and I'd help so many other people. So I was like, you know, I can't then not have a perfect sleeper. And with him, I'll be honest, I think it was more a stroke of luck, because I was really hormonal and emotional after having him, which, you know, I knew how to look after him. I knew all the how-tos, but I wasn't prepared for what I was going to feel like hormonally. So that really took over for me with him. But he was an amazing baby and a fantastic sleeper, and still is. And I never had to try with him. You know, it was very much, I put the things in place that I know if you've got that perfect baby are going to work. And it did work with him. But then with number two, I had Harry, who at this point was only 17 months. So I had two under two. And Harry was at that stage where he needed a lot. And then I had a new baby who had reflux. So it was a completely different ballgame. And the things that I put in place for him were so different from what I'd put in place for Harry. And then by the time it came to number three, that was 3 under 4, and it was survival. She luckily loves her sleep and still does, but it was, she didn't get the routine that the first two had got. She just kind of got on with it. She brought herself up a little bit.
Actually, thinking about it, your kids have definitely not got your sort of not sleeping gene.
No, my kids love their sleep. I'm the one that's like hounding them in the morning. It's funny, there's like memories pop up on Facebook where I'm like, right, come on guys, I'm bored now, can someone get up and hang out with me?
My journey, well, Sarah and I wouldn't be pals, and we wouldn't have a podcast, and we wouldn't have written a book had my first not been such a terrible sleeper. And we had, you know, like I think lots of first-time parents, like I read absolutely everything. I was like, as we were talking about at the beginning, like so focused on these milestones of when things were going to happen. But she had tongue tie and there was lots of feeding issues, and I honestly, even reading everything, I didn't know what to do. The way the information was kind of distilled to me through a lot of those books felt quite patronizing, made me feel like I was a bit of a failure because I wasn't achieving these things. And then I met Sarah and it totally blew up. It saved my marriage, it saved my experience of parenthood. And I was, you know, writing about parenthood at the time, and that was when I was like, right, we've got to put this stuff down in a book at some point. But it became a thing that we were kind of joking about as friends, yeah, like over a glass of wine. And after my second, he was a brilliant sleeper, but I had a horrible time sleeping because I had loads of emotional stuff going on postpartumly, really struggling. And I think that's why we always want to talk holistically about a family, about the parents needing sleep as well, because it can feel like it's something that's missed out of that conversation. You know, there's so much focus on baby sleep, as it should be. Of course, they're the priority, but parents really, really need sleep, and they need support within that as well. And they need to not feel bad about saying, holding their hands up and saying, I'm really tired and I need help.
I think you're so right. And you know what? You speaking is the first time I really piece that together. That I think it, if you find yourself with a kid that doesn't sleep, often it is around a time when you're probably struggling with parenting. I feel like often if I think of my kids, the one I found hardest was my first, and I was going through a lot of personal stress. And so you have these two tracks, you know, I'm not sleeping very well or not feeling very calm within myself, and whether that translates to him or like my decision making, like that's the bit that gives me the shudders, is you're trying to get your kid to sleep, but you're also sleep deprived, so you can't make rational decisions, and you just, yeah, it's very difficult. And then going through my children, by the time it came to my third, because you're more confident as a parent, I could say to my husband, no, I'm going to do this night because I'm feeding her anyway, you go and get some sleep. And I do that without resentment, because actually then you can pick up the pieces during the day. But it took the experience of the other two to be able to say, no, we don't all need to sink with the ship at once.
Totally. And as you said, that's so much about confidence, having been there and knowing it will sort of, well, as we said, it won't necessarily end because it's not in a straight line, but it will get better. And that's why, you know, a lot of things we talk about are about wanting to give parents more confidence and make them feel empowered, because that actually should be the start point. You know, settling techniques, white noise, all of these things might be one thing, but actually feeling good about what you're doing or feeling okay and confident as a parent is equally as important.
And just being able to voice how you feel as well, you know, being able to say, okay, I don't like this, or yes, I can work with this, is really important. Like, I think a lot of parents get sucked into this trap of just thinking, well, you know, I read this, that this is normal somewhere, so I just have to get on with it. And then they suppress how they're really feeling. It isn't then having emotional knock-on effects to absolutely everything, and they don't know when it's okay to then hold their hands up and say, actually, this isn't okay and I can't cope with this. And you know, it just spirals so fast. So what starts out as maybe a baby who hasn't been quite as settled as they potentially could have been developmentally at that stage turns into two parents who then can't sleep themselves and have to start implementing some of the tools and techniques that we've been suggesting for babies, they can then switch and actually start using for themselves. So everything is so interconnected, but the support and chat about it just doesn't open up enough opportunities for parents to be honest about how they're feeling.
Like you said at the start, I do think we are obviously very passionate about sleep, but I think it is this huge thing that sometimes you don't realize how important it is. And actually, rather than sleep getting better, we know so much more about it. Mm-hmm. But it's getting worse because we have these terrible little things that we hold in our hands, and like, oh, you know, the way we are living our lives now means that sleep is significantly worse now than it was even 20 years ago. So it's like we have all this knowledge, but we're ignoring it and we're going, oh no, I know better, or I'm so like attached to this device and the way that I work and the way that we live our lives, mm-hmm, is impacting our circadian rhythm so much.
Yeah, you're so right. And it's really interesting because number one, it's very triggering for people, actually, both in the baby realm, but generally, I think, because
and it is
you couldn't get more of a case of something that happens behind closed doors. And it's only when you begin to go, oh, actually, what time do you go to bed? Or another thing I wanted to talk to you about is that once I realized there's a bit of Piccadilly Circus with the way my kids sleep, they've all got double beds, so that if as an adult you have to end up with them, it's fine. you know, there are big phases when me and my husband don't share a bed, and I don't feel panicked by that anymore, because I think the fundamental for my relationship is that we both sleep. But my point yeah. was, I think I'm like big into fitness, and what I really understood, as well as getting your nutrition right, if you don't have your sleep right, like, your training goes out the window. But it is something that we often kind of hope for the best with, rather than actively prioritize. Would you agree?
Sleep is like, I hope this doesn't come out, but sleep is like the best pill that you don't have to take. Like, it is recovery for your brain and for your body. Like, that's why it's so important for babies. They use it to process absolutely everything, and they are learning an absolute like ton. I was going to say shit ton. I'm not sure it's that podcasting thing, but they're learning so much. And that's why they need all these naps to process all of that. And the same as adults, we use sleep to process the day and for our body to repair, and that, and our mind to repair, essentially, because we're processing the millions of things our brain takes in that we don't even know that we are during the day. And it's going, right, what's important, and getting rid of it, the stuff that isn't. And like, yeah, as you say, whether, you know, in terms of exercise, like, it is essential. Rest days are essential, but sleep is totally essential as well.
Oh, it's so fascinating. I always feel like I end up talking about this, but I wore a glucose monitor for a bit out of interest, you know, in terms of fitness. And yeah. I could see when I was sleep deprived, how much bigger impact caffeine had on me, for example, or how much there's bits when on the glucose monitor I could see that I was trying to get my kids in the car, and my cortisol levels were obviously affecting my glucose, but all of that I could see my body's tolerance for everything was, yeah, the baseline of that was how my sleep had been the day before. So no wonder poor new parents, like, why it can be so difficult, particularly in that first year of parenting, because it's the context for everything, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
I think it's really hard as well for new parents to understand or nationalize why they're getting so grumpy with each other, because, you know, as children get older, we can obviously speak to them about their behavior, and we can communicate with them about their behavior. And you're not going to do that to a baby. You know, you can't say, I feel like this because you've had me up all night or anything. So it becomes, you know, it's ingrained.
So you say it to your partner.
Yeah. And it really does just cause so many arguments. I think we've talked about recently about the importance of not arguing over the cot in the middle of the night. But it's so hard for some people to stop that happening, because you've just got each other to take it out on when you're feeling really, really rubbish.
Well, and you mentioned cortisol spikes. Like, that's what you're, you know, experiencing as a parent as well, and why those arguments happen. But it is because you're tired and you're, you know, your needs are not being fulfilled.
That's it. It's the most classic argument. I'm tired. No, I'm tired. No, we're both tired.
Yeah.
And that is it, as you say, essentially saying,
there is literally no winning.
No, we're both tired and it sucks.
Yeah, exactly.
When it happens for the first time, that's a really difficult place to put yourself, because it is this valuable resource, and you feel like you're taking from one another all the time, and everything feels more difficult, doesn't it?
Definitely.
They did these studies in the 60s in France where they put people in caves to see what happened to their circadian rhythms, and they basically either started sleeping for really long periods of time or no time at all. Like, that's, you know, light and how we set our days is so important. But not only that, huge numbers of the people had to leave because their mental health got so bad. So it's like, but we're sort of living in caves, both as a new parent and in some ways how we live our lives being inside a lot, and how we use artificial light.
Yeah, so do you think that is really important to actively try and get outside as a tool for
100%. Like, we say that with the kids, like, if in doubt, go out. Mm-hmm. But getting daylight in the morning, or getting any kind of daylight, just being outside for ideally an hour a day has an impact on your circadian rhythm. But most importantly is morning light, actually. And they've shown that having that morning light can be one of the most powerful things in terms of dealing with depression. So as a new parent, particularly if you're dealing with hormonal things, which can be really awful having been there, and as the last thing you might want to do is get out, but sometimes it can be really, really good to get out with your baby. But obviously if it's going to cause you more stress.
Yeah, it's getting the balance.
Yeah.
That's so interesting, isn't it? Because you kind of know that in yourself, you know, oh, if I get my kind of best foot forward straight up, the rest of the day tends to follow and vice versa. But actually there is some science behind that. That could well be because you're getting that, yeah, that daylight into you. Whereas I always thought it was just kind of an energy thing, but that translates. How fascinating.
Well, it sort of, it helps. Well, we talked about cortisol and you talk about it being a bad thing, but it can also be a good thing. Like that also, like, you know, when you go to bed, you know, your body starts, when it gets dark, your body creates hormone melatonin, and that's obviously what helps you go to sleep, and you can buy over the counter in America. and then in the morning, we actually use cortisol to get us up, and that's what sets the body clock, that your body will then start producing melatonin about 14 hours later for adults. Obviously, it's different for kids. So cortisol isn't a bad thing, but we feel like it is, but we need to use light to kind of encourage it in ourselves, which obviously, well, we live in Scotland, it's really hard to do in the winter here, but yeah, that's kind of how it works from a sciencey perspective, I suppose.
Oh, that's so fun.
But we talk a lot about bedtime routines and parenthood, and like we also, which not that everyone does, we talk about awake routines with babies, your morning routine being as important. And I think that's really true.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, it's true from both sides, from the parents and the babies, and the children, you know, when you change your mindset. So if you've been up and had a broken night and you'd approach a morning, if you can just flick that switch and be positive and just walk back into the room, you know, leave the room if you've been settling, walk back into the room, and be all jolly and good morning, it's time to get up. It does just really help everybody kind of start on the best foot. You don't always feel it inside, but, you know, opening the curtains and getting that flood of natural light and just putting that positive head on can really help.
I mean, you do hear about like these wild Hollywood routines of things where people are getting up at 4:30 to do exercise and they'll only have, I don't know, kombucha or something like that. I mean, you know, whatever floats your boat, yeah. But actually there are, you know, there are other things that can help.
I did it because there's that book, isn't there, the morning routine, and I did do it during lockdown, actually.
Kombucha and getting up at 4:30 to exercise.
Well, I didn't get up at 4:30, but I got up at 5 and started with like a meditation and then did a little bit of journaling and then did my exercise, all before anyone else had spoken to me. And it did make a big difference. Like, I felt so much better, even though I still wasn't getting any more sleep because I just don't. I felt better for actually starting the day like that. So
you were choosing to get up at 5. I literally couldn't do that. I'm like, I would rather try and eke out as much sleep from the night. That's going to help my morning routine.
But I think there's a really important thing that's knocking around here about being like, okay, not in terms of baby, but in terms of adults, being okay with what works for you as well. I always remember being embarrassed. I really would like to go to bed early. I'm definitely a morning person and go to bed early person. And I always thought that wasn't very cool. And that, you know, oh, I wish I could stay up past midnight. But some people are just wired like that. I think there's some tech companies who try and accept that if you let people work, and, you know, for me, actually, an 8 till 3 day would be a brilliant day for me. But other people might be a midday to 10 p.m., whatever, you know.
If you could just, you know, work out what was right for you and work around that, I think work productivity would just go so
you'd be
much
working
harder.
24 hours.
No, but as I think, like personally, I think for me, if I slept between probably 5 p.m. and 7 p.m., that would be my first 2 hours, and then a game between midnight and 2 a.m. And I think that would be me absolutely perfect. So it is funny how, you know, so maybe actually if I gave myself a chance to go to bed at 5 o'clock, I wonder if I would then sleep. Like 12 hours.
You have to try that. I mean, it's not very useful.
Yeah.
You've got parent kids.
No, I'm I'm a morning person as well, definitely. Yeah. And I totally feel you, like, you know, I would always be the one, well, ghosting kind of meant like, you know, when like trying to leave the pub early without telling anyone because I really wanted to go to bed.
I think, did that not happen at the book launch as well?
Oh, yeah. it's a bit of a classic for me. But yeah, I love going to bed, but I am someone who gets up in the morning, and I would say, I don't know if you know, you can see that with your kids, Clemmy, but like, I have, well, I don't know with the littlest one, but my daughter is like, my husband wants to stay up really late and she would sleep in. And whereas my son, he's just like me. He loves going to bed. And then in the morning, he's like, I'm awake. Let's party.
It's so funny. My first was always an early riser. And I was like, one day we'll kind of beat it out of him. He's 10. He wakes up at 6:15 every single day. He's probably going to do that for the rest of his life. And it's just like, oh, I mean, I laugh now at that all those efforts trying to get him to sleep till 7. He's not wired to sleep till 7. And then my second will sleep till 9 if he's given half the chance.
Totally. I think that's a real misconception around children's sleep as well, that, you know, they will sleep until 7 if you've decided that this is the routine. And it's, you know, it's everywhere. It's on social media. It's in all the books that you can kind of pick and choose. And that's why we sort of emphasise the fact that, you know, really anything from 6 a.m. is morning time. And you can see some poor parents like look at you with horror when you say, well, really 6 a.m. is morning time. And it's like, what? No, like I'm used to sleeping until 9. It's like, not anymore.
It does amaze me, like, you know, when it comes to the weekend or even just during the week, but how much you get done as a parent by like 9 o'clock in the morning. You've been like, yeah, I've like baked some bread and I've like put however many loads of laundry on and I've like done some crafts. Like, I mean, that makes me sound much more accomplished. But some days it is like that.
100%. But I think also I really want to out that, like, I like to go to bed early thing, because if someone invites me for dinner, it's like, oh, we'll meet at 8:30. It's just like, absolutely not. Like, and I used to feel terrible about that. And I have now found a crew of people who are really up for meeting for dinner at 6 p.m. and try and be home for 9:30, 10, and that's okay.
We were saying that just a couple of weeks ago, actually, like, because we've been trying for 2 years to actually get a social event in our diaries. And we were both like, actually, a lunch is better than a dinner for us, just for the way that we work and our body clocks are. So
Sarah laughs because I talk about kids tea, which is like, she's like, makes me think that you're on holiday. And like, but, you know, I love a kids tea. Like, give me dinner at 6 o'clock and I can be in bed by 10. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, I think that's, but yeah, there's definitely this thing about what's expected and what, for me, I definitely didn't feel cool because I couldn't stay up all night. But
I think you're really now, though, with all this stuff about, you know, all these like habits of getting up super early and, you know, maybe it's cooler. Like, I feel like
more fashionable.
Yeah, exactly.
But also, just not to, I want to touch on something you talked about earlier. This kind of, for me, in the worst patches of sleep, I then layered kind of shame and anxiety and feeling like I was failing, and yeah, just going into this sense of doom each day. And that is what can become the real spiral, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it has, as we've talked, it has a huge impact. Sleep has a huge impact on your mental health. And as you said too, that, you know, the worse that gets, the harder it is to make rational decisions about it, I think. And so, you know, it's good to, like, we're joking about it and things like that, but there is obviously a serious component to it, because it has a massive impact on mental health. We're talking about having babies, but on postpartum depression as well. And so that's why we care about it so much, because it really does have these like long reaching fingers into every single aspect of our life.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's a classic case of any of these thorny subjects. You kind of want to give them the gravitas they deserve, but hold it quite lightly so that it doesn't become all encompassing. It's really hard balance, isn't it, between doing good sleep hygiene but also trying to find some acceptance with it when you need to.
Totally. I mean, it is like that psychology study where, you know, don't think about red buses, and then you think about red buses all the time, and sleep so like that, because you're like, you quite often when you can't sleep, you're lying there going, I just want to sleep, I want to sleep, I want to sleep. And that's often the worst thing to help you get to sleep. So talking about that, you don't want to go into it with this amount of pressure that's like, oh my god, sleep is the most important thing in my entire life, because that is just going to make you
not sleep.
Not sleep. Yeah.
I was in preparing for this, I was researching about insomnia, and it's one of those. I actually really didn't want to go too deep on the research because I think it's a bit like that red bus thing. I was last week not sleeping very well at all, waking very, very early. And I was like, oh no, the more I kind of research this, it kind of gets into your psyche. Mm-hmm. Is there such a thing as actual incurable insomnia? Is it a condition that people can have?
I don't know factually. I would imagine yes, but I wouldn't know from a
I wouldn't be able to answer that.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's as I was reading it, I was thinking if you kind of like any of the
like, do you mean if you can never sleep, what would happen to you? Like, would you die?
Not if you could die, but I feel like it sits in a place of any of the challenge, mental health challenges. My theory is there is always levers you can pull to try and shift the dial. It doesn't mean that you will end up being an excellent sleeper, but I also hope that it isn't a case that you have to resign yourself to terrible sleep for the rest of your life.
No, I think there's still good habits that you can put in place. So, you know, like parents that we've worked with that after, you know, fixing or helping with baby sleep, then there's tools that they can put in place to help them. And I don't think, well, I'd say that there's a percentage of the clients that I work with who sleep never returns to what they had or what they thought they had before having children. Mm-hmm. So there's that side of it that, you know, sleep does change, you know, developmentally as adults as well as children, it does change. And I know you hear a lot of sort of the older generation, like my dad, who's in his 70s now, he really struggles with sleep. So, you know, it's almost like it's done a 360 and he's back to where he was when he was a baby with broken nights and the inability to get to sleep easily without some form of help. And for him, it seems to come from the TV. So, you know, he'll get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and then fall asleep in front of the telly. So, yeah, I think he's resigned himself to the fact that he's never going to get solid night sleep again.
I think we often underreport how much sleep we're getting as well. Mm. I mean, like, obviously devices have kind of led to that, but, you know, and that's really true as parents because it feels so broken. And there is quite a big difference, obviously, between your sleep state. So if you are in like active sleep or, you know, you're having REM sleep, you're in a less deep sleep and that can feel less restorative than obviously a deeper level of sleep. And that's very true. I think once you become a parent, full stop, it is very hard to go back to a place of deep sleep for long periods of time because it's almost like you've always got a bit of an ear open. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's true in lots of other, you know, jobs or situations as well, horrible, horrific situations, that you don't kind of manage to get that deep sleep, which I think is why we say mm-hmm. we've got less, even though we actually technically have been asleep for longer.
Yeah, I think that's true.
But I think that there are all the things that we talk about in terms of baby sleep that can help you in terms of adult sleep, if you like, are for people who are struggling with sleep. The more severe cases of insomnia may have much more deeper implications in terms of, you know, what medications you're taking or illnesses that you might have. And that's obviously a much harder thing for us. We can't talk about that because we're not doctors.
Yeah, so it's so interesting, that thing that we assume we've had less. I remember that fateful thing of every time my firstborn woke up looking at the phone and being like, oh God, it's been 45 minutes. And then actually, by the time I got to my third child, I never looked. I was like, I don't need to know what time it is that I've been awake. Because even that little feedback loop in your head of what time it is, how long since I last slept, you've already kind of woken your brain up more than is good for you. I think there's that hilarious thing where you'd try and remember it all night and then you wake up in the morning and actually your brain has forgotten it. And I think that's for good reason, isn't it? We don't actually need to know that data mm-hmm. sometimes.
Totally. We're really big fans of like things like white noise. We were talking mm-hmm. about it for babies, but also it's good for adults. Like, I really feel at the moment I'm not getting into that deep sleep. And having not long moved my son out of our room when he had a white noise machine on all night, genuinely think I was sleeping better with that in. So I said to my husband, I was like, I think we should get a white noise machine in our room just for us to block out the children.
What was it when it sounds like your kids are similar ages. It was you and the dreams, the dream sheep or something. I actually don't think I could.
Oh, you and
I don't think I could hear that sound. I think it would trigger me so badly because it was on a cycle, wasn't it? And it, if it came back round to the beginning, you're like, oh no, we're all still awake. And again, I kind of don't need to know.
20 minutes isn't long enough. You know, that was the thing, like back in the day, you're like, are you kidding me? Nobody's asleep in 20 minutes.
You're looking at the clock all the time. Of course you're not going to fall asleep in 20 minutes.
The job that I was at last night, it was really windy. I don't know if it was windy here last night, but it was really, really windy. And around about 2 o'clock this morning, I was discussing the wind with the parents, and they were like, oh, do you want some earplugs? And I was like, no, it's actually lovely listening to the wind rather than shh, shh, shh. I was like, I'm haunted by these baby noises.
That's your
now.
Pink noise.
I mean, the more I'm talking about it, the more I realise I've got quite a lot of trauma around that time. I recorded myself shushing. And then I could play it to my son. It didn't work.
No. But like... No, my son went through a phase of like wanting, when he was probably about two, of wanting to talk about the day. I'd obviously started doing that, but he just wanted me to do it on loop basically until he went to sleep. So I tried to record it onto one of these like these kind of button things that you get for people who are older who can't remember things, so that he could push the button. Anyway, no, that didn't work anyway. I mean, it is the crazy things that we do to try and find sleep for our kids and for ourselves.
Yeah. And what are your thoughts on, because there's in this subject, there's obviously some more controversial ends of the spectrum, or not controversial, but that are deemed to be controversial. For example, co-sleeping, which I was totally against, and by the end, I co-slept. Because that was what worked for me. And
I think that's a journey for a lot of parents.
All right, yeah. I mean, same as all things parenting. So we've got the kind of different ends of kind of cry out methods of sleep training and also co-sleeping. And what are your thoughts around either of those things?
So everyone should be supported in everything that they choose to do. I, as a sleep consultant, don't work with cry it out or control crying. I don't think you need to. I think there's always other ways of supporting the baby and the parents. And I think, again, like we said at the start, a lot of it is about supporting the parents. And when they feel supported, then they're able to support the baby. So it's looking at the bigger picture rather than just saying this is what you need to do and this is going to work, because there isn't a one size fits all. And so cry it out and control crying, they don't work. But I mean, they will work for some people, of course, but they don't work for everybody. And there's so many other options there. Co-sleeping, I honestly think you would struggle to find any parent that could honestly hand on heart say that they've never co-slept at some point. I know I didn't co-sleep as when mine were babies, but when me and my ex-husband separated, at different times all three of mine came into my bed and co-slept for a while because that's what they needed. So
Sometimes it's what you need as a parent too, and that's okay to hold your hands up and say that.
And I think a lot of parents feel like there's, again, it's that peer pressure, and you know, they feel like they have to choose, when actually you don't have to choose. You can do everything at different points, and when you do it, you're doing it because it's working for you at that point, and everything that you've started you can change when you're ready to change. So it's kind of rewriting that idea that sleep is something that you have to only follow one way for, because you don't. You can pick and choose and mix and match, and it will all work out in the end.
Yeah, this idea of like parenting, like, you know, methodologies, like, it sort of makes people feel like they have to choose what they're going to follow. And most of us pick and choose different things at different times because they work with at different points in our life, but also with different children if we have more than one. And I think, you know, we really want there to be no judgment. If you have chosen to do cry out and it's worked for you, you know, it is not going to harm your child. And I think that's something that people obviously feel strongly about. As long as you're safely doing, there are other ways, But, you know, it's really important that parents don't end up feeling worse about the choices they've made at points and because that they feel like they can't make a different one. There are so many decisions that you make every day for your child, like from the super banal, you know, what breakfast bowl they're going to have to the obviously the more important one. And it's really overwhelming. And so if you just take that judgment and pressure away, those decisions become easier because you're not weighing up all this other external information.
So true, isn't it? It's so true. The end of the day, especially in that acute bit, you're trying to get more sleep in whatever means necessary. And if for me, in the end, it looked like co-sleeping. But if you sleep better with your child out of the room once they're of that age, then that's the right approach to you. It's much like weaning. When I remember again with my first, like, oh, do you do baby led or do you do whatever the other one is, like spoon fed, puree. And then by the end with my third, I mean, let's be real, she's my third, I threw toast at her. But you do a bit of both. And like, show me a 5-year-old that doesn't eat, show me a 5-year-old that doesn't broadly sleep all right. Eventually you do get there, but there is no manual. There are things you can do.
And I think it's about having things that you feel like you like to help you feel like you're in a bit more control and having things that you know you can use. So yeah, you do tend to get 5-year-olds who will sleep in, but they might also struggle. And if you've got things that you can utilize to help them, whether that is co-sleeping because that works for you, or it's other techniques, different kinds of settling techniques. We joked about white noise, but you know, that can still work for older children as well as adults as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. As we wind towards the end, are there any kind of, I don't want to reveal all your secrets, but are there kind of top tips like the getting outside? Anything that anyone who's in a dire state right now might be able to work into their life?
For adults or for children? Actually.
Or for both?
I think the one or the two that are closely connected and work for adults and children are having the awake routine and having the bedtime routine.
It's like bookending your day, basically. Definitely. Having a consistent start point and end point to your day and what that looks like.
Yeah. And just be careful with what it looks like, because I think when people hear the word routine, they feel like it needs to be really in-depth and detailed, and it doesn't. You know, the morning routine can be as simple as walking into the room, smiling, using a sort of standard good morning line and opening the curtains, and that's your morning routine. So it doesn't need to take half an hour, it can literally take 30 seconds. And the same with bedtime, you know, it doesn't need to involve a bath and a massage and, you know, a meditation and all
whale
this
sounds.
Yeah, it can be 5-10 minutes worth of bedtime routine, but it's still a routine that works for everyone.
Yeah, and getting outside, I think, mm-hmm. and getting some daylight or using daylight to help you if you are struggling, which can be hard in the winter in lots of places, but it's an important part of your day even when it's blowing a hoolie.
Think I'm going to really take that on board. I'm just trying to think back to the last couple of weeks, and we've been on half term this week, so quite often we've ended up doing stuff at home and then getting out of the house later on. But I'm wondering if the days when we have got out, it has later on worked out to be a better night. So it's just such an easy thing, isn't it? Just like, actually, come on, when we get up tomorrow, we are all going to get up, get dressed and kind of get on with the day. And I think for whatever reason, that definitely does help. I'm laughing at you saying good morning. I've now got a 10-year-old who finds it offensive if I even try and open the curtains in the morning. He's like, no, it's like you've turned into a vampire.
That's what Harry's like. He's just turned 11 and he's the same. He's just like, Why are you doing that?
I know. I think all of the things that we've been talking about, you can kind of discount, well, preteens and teenagers in, because, you know, a lot of those things are not going to work in that small period of time.
But also, it's so interesting, that bedtime routine, because I know of myself, I know, you know, that I ought to be trying to get into bed at 10, and then you get into a good series and I push that for a week and I go to bed nearer at 11 and lo and behold.
Like just 10 minutes more and then suddenly it's an episode.
Yeah, and then lo and behold, like by the end of the week, I'm like, oh, I'm not really feeling very good in myself and life's feeling a bit difficult. And it's not that I can't go to bed later, but I just know where I need to try and push myself back through. And I think that's how I try and view all of this, kind of self-help, that's a bit of a horrible term, stuff. It's knowing what are the things that work for you and exist with them loosely. But I think it's really helpful to know, to have those to go back to.
I think phones, you know, we've only really touched on it, but it's such a massive thing. You know, you might watch that series, which is fine, but then you go to your bed and you've got your phone, you're plugging it in beside you, and you have a look at it. You'll randomly go on some sort of social media and you'll have a scroll. And, you know, we all know that blue light isn't good for us, but we can't help ourselves because it's meant to be addictive. And then, and conversely, talking about morning routines, like I've been really trying to not immediately pick up my phone and like look at the news or something like that. Like I worked on kids programs back in the day and a new kids news program, and they did all this research and that we're much more emotional in those early stages in the morning. So the kind of the news that you can consume affects you more at that time. But I definitely find that for me, both in the morning and at the end of the day, I'm much more emotional. And And yet that's often when we choose to both scroll on social media and read or look at the news. And I think that for me, you're saying, you know, these are the things that you need to know about. I have to be quite strict with myself about those things because I know how much it impacts my mental health.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a kind of role modelling thing there as well, isn't there? It's like I'm quite so often trying to extract my children from screens and then meanwhile, spending the last hour of my day scrolling whilst watching TV. Exactly. It's like, you know, as a household, I think we've touched on it at the beginning, and it's such an important thing to think of yourselves as this organism that all kind of work together. And the problem is if you are in a family and one person's in a terrible mood, it can go through the whole family. So we do need to try and work as one on this.
In terms of personalities, I say that like some of us are the weather and some of us are like the weather presenter. I used to also do that. But like my husband and my daughter are the weather. They come in and it is their mood that impacts the whole rest of the house. Whereas I feel like my son and I are trying to work out how everyone's feeling, how we can make everyone okay and how we're going to manage that weather.
That's
today.
So true, isn't it? I usually ask at the beginning what star signs people are. What star sign are you both?
I'm right on the cusp of Capricorn and Sagittarius.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah.
I'm Aries.
I'm a Pisces, so a Mosh.
Pisces, yeah. I know. I
know about Pisces.
Well, Pisces and Aries, like there are similarities, I guess, and kind of close in terms of
vibes.
Where they fall in the year.
It's interesting.
Pisces are the philosophers,
yes,
right?
Just, I'm forever in an emotional spiral, but I've got an Aries moon, so my energy is quite Aryan. Yeah, bullish.
Bullish.
It's a bit bad. Like I'm bullish and then emotional, bullish and then emotional. Kind of doing my own head in. But it's kind of interesting. I've got two, my husband and one of my sons are the fire signs, and then my others are very thinky kind of signs. And it's kind of, it's interesting, the family dynamics. And that's why with every child that you have, it has to shift constantly, doesn't it?
Totally. Mm-hmm. The dynamic changes and like that goes for every single part as well as sleep.
That's it, isn't it? It is. And it's such a fascinating subject, isn't it? Because if you have bad sleep, then often for me, then I start making bad food choices. Not bad, I'm not demonizing any foods, but I drink more caffeine, will eat more sugar. And then by the end of the day, that is probably going to make the next night's sleep bad. And it's just, I keep saying it, it's just trying to unravel things a bit. And with any of these spirals, start working your way back up it to feel like you're in a more positive place.
Well, we have needs. We talk about, you know, you have food needs and you have sleep needs, and sometimes they can be a bit interchangeable. And quite often, like so often, I notice my daughter will go to bed and she keeps telling me she's hungry. And I'm like, she'll have had a massive dinner, she'll have had a plate, but actually what she is tired, but she doesn't like going to sleep. So she kind of confuses that need. And I think that's also true. You've had a bad night's sleep, you've maybe had a night out, you know, we use food to kind of replace the sleep that we've lost. And sometimes that can work in your favor. Like we talk, you know, in both in the book and in podcast, like when babies are dropping naps or they're struggling to get to kind of the next stage, of course, you know, you're a parent, you whip out the rice cakes or whatever, you can use food to get them on to the next step of when they need to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's it is about fulfilling needs, and they are interchangeable. But sometimes, obviously, if you're fulfilling those needs, as you say, with less good things, that can have an impact. And clearly, coffee is amazing, but it has an impact too.
So true. And it's funny, that thing that you say about, yeah, when they're saying they're hungry, it's tiredness, because it's such a certain thing to tune into. It's so weird, as a kid you like spend all your time resisting sleep, and then you become an adult, you know, all I want to do is go to bed. But I think they have to learn what tired feels like, and I've never really thought about that before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
definitely.
This is a complete aside, but I've always...
And they might know what tired feels like, but they might not want to actually close their eyes and go to sleep. So it's easier to say, I'm hungry.
Yeah. My daughter often forgets how to close her eyes, and it's like, oh, just try it. Just try it. Oh, sometimes it's like, oh, it's going to be one of those, is it? It's going to be one of those nights.
Yeah.
I've also had a thing in my house where I really realised that I think my kids are quite often dehydrated. That sounds awful. But I've just been like, sometimes get to lunchtime, have any of you had any water today? No wonder you're all cross. You're thirsty. And yeah. I think when you've got smaller children, you're very clued up into doing that. And then they get to an age, you're like, oh, you know, if they're thirsty.
Well, again, that's like a need quite often when you think you're hungry and actually you're thirsty. Like, it's just, I think we gravitate towards hunger being the solution to everything. But my husband is like, I don't know, some sort of like, he's insane with what he thinks everyone is just thirsty, dehydrated all the time. Like, you know, you're in labor. Have you had some water? You know, I've stubbed my toe. Have some water.
I'm a subscriber to your husband's web. Then you look at our parents' generation and they're like, do you want a glass of water with lunch or that? Oh no, I had one at breakfast. How are you not all thirsty? Yeah. Totally. Okay, a couple of questions to end. Number one, where can people find you and what do you want to shout about so they can go and search you out?
You're a bit of a shout than me.
We are at The Sleep Mums on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. We've dabbled in YouTube, but still don't quite know what we're doing with that. Most importantly, we have our podcast, which is also called The Sleep Mums, which we focus mostly on baby and toddler sleep, but there's lots of stuff in there for parents and adults as well, things about like parent guilt and we have our book Sleep Better Baby, which is available in all good bookshops and online, and that's a look at the sort of first 16 months really of sleep for babies. And as you said, you know, we want it to be supportive to parents and empowering to parents, and certainly not patronizing. And it's kind of it's a group of guidelines that can support you well past the 16 months, but that's kind of the age that it focuses
on. Exactly. It. You need some guidelines, don't you? You don't need a manual where if you miss that window. I just remember some of those early sleep schedules.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah.
It's quarter past 10 and he's still awake. My whole day is ruined.
Yeah, no, it's not like that at all.
And also we have stuff about coming back from a bad day so your day isn't ruined, and about hacking routines because they're not for everyone.
And I think actually, sorry, as we were talking, when I was reading through your work, we've touched on something, but if you've got a new baby and the world is feeling very, very difficult for you, you know, I think I was confused with my first postpartum experience that what I was feeling was just normal and was just that it's meant to feel that shit. And of course it is. But yeah, I think there's a real message to seek help, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. You can get help. Everybody can get help, and everybody should know that they can ask for help.
And there's definitely there should never, ever be any shame in doing so, because it is really, really hard. Like, it is hard.
Yeah. And, you know, postpartum depression, postpartum psychosis, these are real things that so often go undiagnosed just because you're like, oh, I've got to suck this up, or it's just new parenting. And that definitely shouldn't be the case. So that's kind of very serious bit of messaging, that if the world is feeling really bleak, please just tell someone, I think, rather than suffer in silence.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there is help out there, and you know, lots of mm-hmm. great places like Pandas and
yeah.
Sands and Lullaby Trust, obviously, for safe sleep. It's a good place to go to as well.
Show notes to help people. And then another whopper question. If you could have an honest conversation with one person, who would it be and what would you say, each of you?
My 1-year-old. Well, just I don't know what he's saying at the moment. Everything's up.
Gosh, I don't know. But probably my 10-year-old, and it's a conversation that I think we will, or my now 11-year-old, who was 11 last week, but I think it's a conversation that we will have at some point, but it would be about how the separation impacted mm-hmm. him, because I think out of the three of them, he was the one that was probably the most vulnerable. So I think one day in the future that will happen, but yeah, he's still too young just now. So
yeah, I'm sure, I don't know if I'm going to put words in your mouth, but I'm sure if it's something that you're aware of, I like to think that these conversations, difficult conversations in time, do happen. It's just putting them in your awareness, isn't it?
Yes. It's just finding the right time for everybody.
And so. I think you always give him the space and support to be able to. So if you're going to feel emotional, it's just come off night shift.
I think that's a big one. Yeah, well, that's the whole point, isn't it? What's the thing? If it's a difficult conversation, it's worth having. It's just knowing when to have it, probably not off the back of no sleep.
Not off the back of a night shift. Well, that's also, you know, we say don't try and talk about sleep around sleep time.
Definitely.
Or big things.
It's so true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so true, isn't it? You got to try and have your wearables about you. And as for your 1-year-old.
Like, I hate that adage, like, don't go to sleep in an argument, because I think having an argument between the hours of 6 and 10 is worse. Wait till the next day to have it.
Yeah, so true. Well, it's like our grandparents always said, you know, sleep on it when you can, but sleep on it, because everything feels horrendous in that window when you're trying to get to sleep, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You suddenly, when you can't sleep and you're going through everything you've ever done ever wrong, and just, and then in the morning, you're like, why am I even caring about that? It's fine.
Totally. Oh,
the irrational mind is killer. Well, thank you so much, ladies. I think for a massive bit of reassurance for people that it will be all right. There's stuff that you can do, and that you're really, really not alone.
Exactly.
In finding particularly that baby bit tough, because it's legitimately tough.
Definitely. No, well, thanks so much for having us on. We loved it. It was great.
That was a great chat. I'm a big fan of sleep. I mean, everybody likes sleep, don't they? But at periods in my life, I've been extremely obsessed and anxious about sleep, because if I don't get it, I'm not very good. And obviously, when you have small kids, that isn't very easy. But I well and truly lost my mind with my firstborn, and lots of that was to do with the adjustment of becoming a parent, but also because I just didn't know how to help him sleep. And then when I did learn how to help him sleep, I didn't know how to sleep myself. So I absolutely recommend that the work that the girls do. I think that they put it across in such a brilliant way. Also, as I've gone away from this episode, I worry that at some point I sounded like I might have been suggesting that insomnia doesn't exist, or that I don't know what. I feel like I came across wrong. Insomnia sounds like the worst thing ever. So if anyone is an insomniac, I'm sorry if that's the case, and I have absolute empathy for you, because it must be very, very difficult. And that's a wrap. That's another episode of But Why Done. Thank you for being here and for listening. Please join me next time for more on his chats. I say it often, but if you could rate, review and subscribe and share it with your mates, it makes a huge difference. I'm always trying to get this into as many ears as possible. Or come and find us at But Why Podcast on Instagram. I am going to go and have a coffee. It's fine. I was just looking what the time. The sleep thing, I am absolutely vigilant. I really can't have coffee much later than 3, which we're fine. So I'm going to go and have a coffee. Wishing you a lovely day, and catch you next time. Bye-bye.